Drive Time Radio with New York Vinny.
And what a grand morning it is. A very good morning to you and everybody that looks like you. It is Drive Time Radio, New York Vinny here with you on a Saturday morning, as usual, on Alternative Talk 1150 KKNW. Kind of crisp and cool, clouds in some places out there, but a little windy too here at the Garden Studios of Golden V Media. But, listen, it's not raining. It's not icy. It's not snowing. You can bundle up and go out and go for a nice drive today. Matter of fact, these are great days, I think, to go for drives. I love, and I know I'm a little nuts on this, but I'm one of them people that love to put the top down on a convertible when it's cold out, put a scarf on, put a hoodie on, and go out for a drive in the winter. The cold air, does something for me. I don't know, I get the heater blasted and everything. But I'm that guy that drives with the window open in the middle of winter in the rain. You know, I get more people saying, why do you do that? I don't know. Maybe it's claustrophobia. I know a lot of other people do it too. Not as many as you would think, but, you got to have that window down. We grew up in that era where when you drove a car, you put the driver's side window down, even in the winter. Just because that's the way you stuck your arm out the window or something, and I'm one of those people. And I think at this point, I'm not going to change, no matter what it is. I mean, I've driven Bentleys in the winter and Rolls Royces in the winter and still had my arm sticking out the window because that's what I'm used to. It doesn't make for a great date, I guess, if the person, especially if they get cold. But I'm usually pretty considerate about that kind of stuff and put the window up. We got a great show for you this morning. Everybody always says that. They say that every week on Saturday Night Live. If you watch Saturday Night Live, what does the host say just before they're about to go? We got a great show for you. Whether it's a good show, a crappy show, no matter what, we're not going to tell. Nobody's going to sit here and tell you, we got a pretty rancid show for you today, to be honest with you. It's pretty, this thing smells like week-old milk. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to tell you it's a great show no matter what. If we don't even know what the show is going to be, we're going to tell you it's a great show. So believe you me when I tell you, this one's not going to be rancid. This is going to be really good, actually. My friend and woman I admire, Lisa Barrow, is going to join us. She is, besides being a manufacturer's representative for a major metropolitan car company, is a motorcycle adventurer. And I really want you to hear her story, because she and a group of her friends go on motorcycles and go to countries that I can't even spell. Kyrgyzstan and all these different places where the road ends, and it's not like another road, that way. It's like a mountain, and it's done. It's over. That's it. It's the end of the earth. She's been to the highest road in the world, as high as it gets. What is a dirt road where you can go? She's been there. So we'll talk to her a little later in the show about these adventures that she does. I think they're awesome. I think that it's especially interesting for women to travel in some of these countries the way the rules are. I think it takes a certain amount of bravery and a certain amount of knowing the room, I guess, would be the way you would say it. But I'm excited to talk to her and let you in on that conversation. That'll be at 8:15 this morning. A little later, we have a cartoon of the morning for you as we continue that. And, of course, our review of the week is coming up, our Drive Time Road Test. All right, let's take a look at the top five.
Time now for this week's top five.
The five things you need to know about cars and car culture this week.
And, boy, it's been a slow week in the car world in some respects. So not a lot of big stories, but the stories that were out there, I think, are pretty interesting. And we started off this morning with, I think, one of the strangest stories in the car world. You probably haven't followed it. If you have, it's playing out more and more like a murder mystery than it is anything else. And that's the former head of Nissan, Carlos Ghosn, and his escaping this week from Japan to Lebanon. Now, the backstory on this, Ghosn was involved allegedly in some fund shifting, some secret funds, some money moved to a dealership in Oman. This guy was the president of Nissan. I mean, he was running the whole thing. And he got involved with this kind of allegedly shady kind of dealings with some car dealers and some people and some money under the table and, you know, so on and so forth. It sometimes happens to rich men. You know, they have all the power in the world and they want more, so they usually manifest it in money. Well, he was arrested by Japanese authorities, let out under house arrest on, I think it was $14 million bail. It was a lot of money. Yeah, $14 million bail as he was awaiting trial in Tokyo. So, this week, all of a sudden, Carlos is gone. He's not at his house, not at his apartment, nowhere to be found. And the rumors started swirling that he had turned up in Lebanon, in Beirut, and that he had escaped, get this now, had escaped in a box. I guess they had some kind of affair, some kind of deal at his house. I like this. You know, you're under a house arrest and you can have a band come in and play for you. But anyway, he was they had a band come in and play at the house. And then after the band left, nobody saw Ghosn anymore. Ghosn was gone. So the popular theory is that he had himself installed in an instrument box and wheeled out and taken to the airport so nobody would know. Now, it sounds like a great story. And it was kind of the buzz of the automotive world this week. You know, I mean, you know, it's not often that an automotive executive is accused of leaving his house in a box, but he's still breathing. So, anyway, it turns out that people in Japan, and I guess some of Ghosn's people too, are telling NPR that he escaped house arrest by just walking out. That they had noticed that the Japanese authorities had been lax in their surveillance. Who knows, maybe there was some money paid off, maybe not. Maybe all of a sudden somebody got the... He's going to be riding around in a new, you know, GT4, so, you know, something slick. A new GTR. But anyway, it turns out that he has said, or his people have said, or somebody has said, that he did not escape Japan in a box, but walked out and got from his house to the airport into the jets that took him and his people to Lebanon. So he forfeits the $14 million in Japan, becomes a fugitive, and now who knows what will happen. I don't know about extradition treaties and so on and so forth, but there was a bit of romance about this. I mean, you know, listen, we all like that story where somebody figures out a way to get out in a different and unique way. And especially when it's a rich guy or a rich woman who figures out how to escape in a unique way. We all love that kind of story. So that's the story this morning of Carlos Ghosn, who is now a resident of Beirut and cannot set foot, I would think, outside of Lebanon or go to many places, because I'm pretty sure Japan has an extradition treaty with many countries. The top 10 cars sold at auction in 2019, and I won't give you all 10, but what an impressive list of cars that were sold this year by Sotheby's and all the different auction houses, the number one car that was sold this year, the highest dollar car at auction, was a 1956 Ferrari 290 MM, $22,005,000 by R.M. Sotheby's in Los Angeles. A beautiful, beautiful machine. It was finished second in the 1956 Mille Miglia. I better say that right, or my Italian friends aren't going to like me anymore. Mille Miglia. It had been driven by Phil Hill, the famous race car driver at Sebring, and Wolfgang von Trip at the Nassau Speedworks in the Bahamas. The car had pedigree. The car had class. The car was something that it had the provenance, and it went for $22,005,000. That was the top car of the year. Second was the 1994 McLaren. They went for $19.8 million. A 39 Alfa Romeo 2900B Berlinetta, $18.9 million. A 58 Ferrari, a beautiful car, GT Spider, for $9.9 million. And some of the other interesting cars. The James Bond car is on here. Let me just scroll down the list here a second. The James Bond car is on here. The Aston Martin DB. This one was down at the Smoky Mountain Car Museum. Sat on display there in a cage for 35 years. But a spectacular example of the 65 Aston Martin DB5 Coupe, sold by R.M. Sotheby's in Monterey for $6,385,000. I guess this was the one that was used in Thunderball. Outrageous prices for these cars. But if you have a pedigree car like that, that's what they're going for. Certainly a car that's been in a Bond movie. Although, you know, Aston Martin has undercut that market a bit by making available a replica of this car. So you can now go to an Aston Martin dealer for $1 million, I think, or something like that. Build yourself one that not only is a 65 DB5 coupe, but also has all of the stuff that the Bond car had on it. So that's the auction scene. And just one more quick thing. The figures are in for new car sales for 2019. I can tell you that the Camry remains on top as far as family cars. We'll have to see what happens when Ford reports their figures. They don't report them until Monday, until everybody else is done with theirs. But SUVs continue to grow. Sedans grow for the Koreans, not so much for everybody else. And as I said, we'll see what happens. I know that the just got word that the Mustang, the Mach-E, is sold out. That you can't buy one of the electric Mustang SUVs sold out. All right, take a quick break. And we come back, Lisa Barrow joins us. Motorcycletes extraordinaire here on Drive Time. I'm New York Vinny, News Radio, 1150 KKNW.
No matter how you say it,
cruce con la verde, en el medio pierde.
It always means the same thing.
Attraversate soltanto al segnale verde, mai nel mezzo della strada.
Cross at the green, not in between.
Geht darüber de gas, no, denn wenn's is green, nicht ergens zwischen in mitten vom block.
It means cross at the corner, never in the middle of the block. Don't walk until the light turns green. Always cross at corners where motorists expect you and where you can see them. Cross at the green, not in between. In any language, it's a way of life.
Don't cross the street in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle of the block. Don't cross the street in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle of the block. Use your eyes to look up. Use your ears to hear. Walk up to the corner when the coast is clear. And wait until you see the light turn green. Don't cross the street in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle of the block. Don't cross the street in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle, in the middle of the block.
Alternative Talk 1150. Talk radio for the body, mind, and soul.
You're listening to Drive Time Radio with New York Vinny.
And it is Drive Time. I'm New York Vinny. Thank you so much for listening to our radio show this morning here on Alternative Talk, KKNW. We get a chance every week to talk to somebody who means something to the car world or the car business or motorcycles or vehicles that move. We do it every week. And this week I thought it would be kind of cool to have a friend of mine join us that is by day works for a major American car company. Actually, it's a major European car company now. But by other days is a motorcycle adventuress. She and a group of women take these extraordinary trips to these faraway places on motorcycle. I mean, me, I get a little worried if I go up to, go up to Mount Baker camping and I got to walk 10 feet from the car. This woman and her friends, this group of women, go out on the roads of Asia and Europe and places that not many people, I don't think, venture. Her name is Lisa Barrow. And she joins us now. Lisa, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Denny. Great to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, yeah, good to talk to you. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, back at you.
Now, today you're just in the United States, right? You're not in some faraway place talking to us by satellite phone, are you?
Well, my imagination is in a far-off place, but I'm actually here in the States. I had
good,
to be,
good,
so I could
good.
Get together with you,
well,
right?
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about what you do first. And you send me pictures from all over the world. You and a group of women, and I think the group probably changes a little bit from time to time, go on these spectacular motorcycle adventures. What in the world made you think, gee, I want to ride a motorcycle in Kyrgyzstan?
You know what? I've had a philosophy where you should never know too much about something or you'll freak yourself out and you'll never do it. So that's kind of my philosophy, which has led me to a lot of crazy places. But I think one common thread that a number of the people I ride with have in common is the person that inspired them. So it's really funny. My husband got a book called Lois on the Loose years ago. And he said, you know, you really need to read this book. And I'm like, yeah. I put it on my bedside table. And like a year later, I finally picked it up. I couldn't put it down. It was the greatest book. And when I closed it, I'm like, I'm going to ride motorcycles. So Lois Bryce was the inspiration. So she's awesome. But anyway, so my husband discovered a trip that Lois was leading through Brazil. So I was scared to death to do it, but I did it anyway. And that's where I started to meet these other women riders, and we had the best time, and we got to hang out with Lois. And some of the other women on the trip had also read her book, and it was their inspiration for riding as well. So she led us all over Brazil, and it was just incredible. Incredible. First mud encounter. Never ridden in the mud before, and did a little mud, so I got some good pictures for that. But it was just an amazing experience, and she continues to be an inspiration, I think, to all of us. So,
and you went to places, and you went to places that, you know, like you didn't ride through the streets of Rio or through towns. I mean, you went to some, when you went to Brazil to start, you went to some pretty far away and interesting places that maybe people wouldn't go even if they had a horse.
Oh, I think that's really true. It's just easier to travel on a motorcycle, less stuff, and you're much smaller space. You can go off road if you need to, no matter where you are, and you take all the back roads, so there's not a ton of traffic, and you really discover interesting things that you won't find in a tour guide book. And one of the highlights of the Brazil trip was we were running through the countryside, and all of a sudden we went through this small little neighborhood, and we rounded the corner. Everything opened up, and we were heading into the Cerro do Rio Rastro mountain range, and it was the most amazing road that led through this range. It felt like we had gone back thousands of years in time, and it was incredible. And here you are, you're just in a neighborhood, and then you round the corner, and everything is different. It was like we were in the middle of a time warp, and it was spectacular riding. The most intense switchbacks I think I've ever been on. What?
Yeah, is there a fear about all of these places, or do you kind of lose your fear because you're in a group?
Well, you know what? You have fear for sure, and sometimes there, like in India, there's a few times where I thought I was going to die, but you're in the middle of it. So you just have to do it. It scares the heck out of you. It's exhilarating. It's fun. But sometimes you're doing things where you're just horrified, but you can't turn back because back is not necessarily better. So you just plow through it, and I'm still here, so I guess that's a good thing. not with some broken things on my body, that's for sure. But you know, they're good memories. Let's just say that.
My friend Lisa Barrow is with us. She's I call her a motorcycle adventuress. I'd say you go to Brazil, you like the trip, you go with Lois. Now you go on another trip. You say, okay, where am I going to go next? New Jersey? No, I think I'll go to India because that sounds like a good idea, right?
Now, India, we connected with a woman called Tiffany Coates. She has been. She is a true motorcycle adventuress. She's been doing it since, I don't know, she was 20 years old. And she led this trip through India. And that one, literally, we got a little email that said, nothing we can show or say can properly prepare you for the adventure ahead. You're going to be surprised, horrified, scared, relieved, exhilarated, tired, overjoyed, emotional, and the list goes on. But basically, they said it's going to change your life, and it totally did. That trip, the environment, I mean, we're riding up through the Himalayas, and you're riding over these big boulders and sheer drops. I mean, literally, we didn't think that we would all make it through because the sheer drops and the you don't have that much room to ride when you're heading up the mountains. And but the gift at the top of the Himalayas is the place called Kardun Law, and it's the world's highest motorable pass. And it is 18,380 feet, and there's a big sign up there with all kinds of prayer flags, and it's amazing. But getting up there, I'm tired just thinking about it. But great picture. You can only stay up there for about 45 minutes because the air is just, you're up so high and too thin, and it's just not enough oxygen up there. But that was one of the toughest things.
And you got to bring gas, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
There's not a gas station or a rest stop up there once you get up there, huh?
Yeah, no gas station. There's definitely not a gas station, but that trip, I mean, the roads would be washed out from the water coming down from the snow melting on the top of the Himalayas, and all of a sudden you'd have to cross this rushing water going across the road that's littered with these humongous boulders, and it's... I mean, it kind of freaks me out a little bit now thinking about it, but I have a nice scar from that one on my little shin.
Yeah, you got hurt on that trip, huh?
I did. I ended up in an Indian hospital. Let me just tell you, you don't want to end up in an Indian. It was the ER, and yeah, that was quite an experience. Little trash everywhere and flies and, you know, all kinds of craziness. So, but I made it through, and when I got home, I went straight to our ER, and they're like, yeah, your leg's infected, but you're going to make it. So I'm like, okay, that was good. But it's that is a beautiful country.
Yeah, because and, the stuff you can catch.
Yeah, you know, mine was strictly cuts and bruises, but the food is awesome, the landscape is incredible, and, you know, we got to see Taj Mahal, and just, it's a beautiful country that I would go back to in a heartbeat, for sure. And I'm actually mulling over...
How are the people on these trips when they see you coming in, all these women on a motorcycle, is it like a celebratory thing? Is it something where they can, you know, some of these countries that you go to don't exactly have the best views of women doing, you know, anything but laundry?
Well, I think in India, I mean, there's a lot of people that ride on two wheels and because they can't really afford cars. So I don't think we were that unusual in India, but when Tiffany she organized another trip for us in Kyrgyzstan, and that trip, I mean, they don't really have an official tourism structure. So, and women are certainly, I mean, nobody's riding motorcycles. They can't even afford motorcycles. They're riding horses and things like that. So you end up staying right with people in their homes, and but when we would ride, they just didn't see motorcycles. People would line the streets, the parents and the kids, and just stare at us. And then when they would find out that we were women, that just blew them away, because that just doesn't happen. Women are not doing that. So that Kyrgyzstan I loved, just because it was so, you know, it didn't have a lot of, there weren't a lot of tourists. It was like we were from outer space, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful as well. And we stayed in yurt camps, and we hung out with an eagle hunter one day, and they taught us all about how, you know, that works for them when they find these baby eagles when they're young, and they have this 20-year relationship with them where they go hunting. And then they set them free at the end of their relationship. It was fascinating. That's a place I would go back to, for sure. So it, I think of all the places, that's a place where people just didn't know what to make of us. And when they discovered, when our helmets came off and they found out we were women, that freaked them out.
Well, it had to be shocking. I mean, they had to be looking and going, what in the world? What was the most impressive thing about the people in that country? Because, I mean, we don't hear a lot. I mean, we hear a lot about Brazil, obviously, and a lot about India. But you don't hear a lot about that country and the people. What was what was it like to talk to people there? What language did they speak, Kyrgyzstanistic or what?
I mean, they're speaking Russian. That's their official language. Which I do not speak any Russian, but, you know, there's ways to communicate with people, especially when you're trying to, you know, you're trying to get food or something like that. And people were so welcoming to us, but we did not speak, you know, we really didn't communicate with language. It was more of like, you know, smiling and kind of pointing, that sort of thing. But they all welcomed us, which was really great. We loved it. So I think, I remember one time we were just stopped on the side of the road we had had some snacks with us, and a man, it was during their sunflower harvesting season, and this man just pulls over, and he jumps out, and he has this huge sunflower with all the little seeds sticking up, and he gives it to us for us to snack on for a little roadside lunch, and it was just so sweet. And then he was gone. So I think they were fascinated by us. I think that they liked interacting with us. And in fact, we had four motorcycles. So two of the women on two of the motorcycles got pulled over by the police. And I was on the other side of the road with my girlfriend, Sue Stark, and the policeman, he kept trying to get us to leave. And we're like, we're not leaving our friends. And they were holding Tiffany and Sandra over there and interrogating them. And finally, the one officer walks across the road, and he's trying to talk to Sue and to me. And he sees my wedding ring, and I don't know how we got to this point, but somehow he was asking me, why did your husband let you come here without him? So he wanted to see a picture of my husband, so I showed him a picture of my husband in my phone, and he was laughing. And by the end, we didn't get tickets, and we got a picture with all the policemen.
There you go. Yeah, you have some great pictures from these trips. It's pretty amazing. Some of the photos, and I'll put some of them up on our Facebook page so people can go there and take a look at them. It truly warms my heart to see you do this, and also makes me feel like somebody listening to this show that has wanted to do something like this hears you do it and says, okay, I can do the same thing, especially around motor vehicles, because, and I found this when I went to Cuba, which is, you know, obviously not as far away as India or Brazil or some of those countries, but there was a common communication when you had a motor vehicle with you, whether it be a motorcycle or a classic car, or if you talked about cars, it's like music and sports. There's people that warm up to that right away when they see it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, something that if people are interested in doing this, like, I don't have a ton of off-road experience. And yet, and in fact, when I'm in this country, I'm usually riding on, you know, decent roads. But when I've gone to these other countries, I'm on these roads that I've never, you know, a lot of the off-road, I don't do it on a regular basis. But some of the women that go on the trips, like, I mean, obviously Tiffany and Lois do a lot of it, and Sue Stark is amazing off-road. So they're really great at it, and they have yet to leave me behind, so I really appreciate that. But
it's not good to be left behind.
What?
I said not good to be left behind in a place like that.
Right. And you know, also, there's other places to start. I did an Alps tour with my husband, and that was on great roads and beautiful mountains. So, you know, you can start off and ease yourself into it before you, you know, do the really crazy things, right?
Right. Where next? Where do you go next now? Are you thinking about another trip? Is there a country that you're thinking about or a place that you're thinking about where it'd be kind of cool to ride?
Well, you know what? I'm always mulling it over, and Sandra, one of my biker friends from the original Lois trip, she's doing Rajasthan, and she's like, "Come with us!" So I would love to do that. The timing's not that great for me work-wise, but I'm thinking about it. So we'll see. I would like
you
to.
You
got to
truck another one up, right?
Yeah, I know. I do. So we'll see.
Now I have to go back and ask you though. Now you said you took one of these trips with your husband. What did you enjoy more, taking it with your husband, or taking it with your gal pals?
You know what? It's totally different. Like, he and I rented Royal Enfield Himalayans and rode out in Montana in the summertime this past summer, and we had a blast. There's nobody out there on these beautiful back roads, so I've had a great time, and he and I went over to Isle of Man and watched the races, and that was a blast. Loved it. So they're totally different experiences. I think, and they're both really fun. Love them both. So and sometimes Jack mix in with all the girl trips that are here in the States. So you know, it's good.
Right. I need to mention your husband's an avid biker as well. I mean, he's a real
expert
on bikes and really knows his stuff when it comes down to it.
Yeah, I think he was riding in the womb. Honestly, he's like a natural. So, yeah, oh, he's probably to blame for all of this as well.
Well, he's done well for himself, and it's fun to talk to you about this. I've wanted to have you on since we started the show, and I figured this was a good way to kick off our new year. I think it's what you do is empowering to people. I think there's probably some woman listening to this and say, who's probably had a fear of doing a trip like this and listens to this and says, hey, you know what? You know, plain old Vinny's friend Lisa can do it. I can do it too.
Well,
you know, it's,
I mean,
it's it means something to people, I think, when people go out, regular people go out and do stuff like this.
No, I agree. And there's definitely fear involved. Even with people that are, that, you know, have a lot of experience, if they're doing, if they're going to a new place, there's a little apprehension. So, but I think in the end, that makes the trip better when you actually get through something that was really hard. But I think, you know, I believe you should learn in layers. So start with something that's not too crazy and then build on it. I think that helps. So, and maybe one of these days I'll actually get some really good off-road training. That's on my list.
Well, I hear there's a school you can go to.
There are a couple of schools.
There's a couple of schools. Lisa, it's so good to hear your voice and to spend some time with you. It's, I hope our listeners get as much out of this as I did. And so, and as I said, somewhere some woman is, or some man is listening to this and says, hey, you know what? I've wanted to do something like this all my life. And if Vinny's friend Lisa can do it, so can I. So if we did that, we made our point today. We can all go home happy.
Well, this was fun. This was fun. I've enjoyed
all right,
I will, time.
I will talk to you soon. Thank you so much for jumping on with us.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. It's my friend Lisa Barrow, who I call a motorcycle adventuress. I will put the pictures up on the Facebook page so you can see where she's been, some great pictures and some great times with my friend Lisa Barrow. When we come back, we have our cartoon of the week. It is Drive Time here on Alternative Talk 1150 KKNW.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed...
608 to 90-10-4.
...could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Be sure to support the sponsors of your favorite shows on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Drive Time Radio with New York Vinny.
Back with you here on Drive Time Radio. Thanks a lot to Lisa Barrow for spending some time with us. Great talk about motorcycles and so on and so forth. We'll get that up online if you missed any part of it. We'll have that in our podcast, which you can always take off of Apple and Stitcher and Anchor and just about everybody else that has a podcast. You can find it on the different podcast services. And, of course, you can always get a hold of us by email at vinny@drivetime-radio.com. That's vinny@drivetime-radio.com. If you have any correspondence about the show, about the podcast, or would like to sponsor or advertise on the show, we certainly would love to have you talk to us about that as well. All right, time now for the cartoon of the week. Every week we pick out a tune, a song that goes along with cars or automotives or bicycles or motorcycles or whatever. This week, in honor of Lisa, we picked out one from, I believe, like 1971, I want to say. But this was this charted in the summer, I believe, of 1971. It's a group called Sailcat and Motorcycle Mama. One of those one-hit wonders and Motorcycle Mama. And every week we do a cartoon. Starting next week, we will have a little fun with the cartoons where we actually let you win some prizes that we have gathered for the cartoon segment. We have some really neat musical prizes that to give away. And we will involve you, let you kind of pick out some of the cartoons that we play here on Drive Time Radio. We come back, we will have our road test of the week, our Drive Time road test of the week. Got a chance to spend a week in a car that you don't see a lot of, and I just quite don't know why. So we'll ask that question next here on Drive Time. I'm New York Vinny on Alternative Talk 1150 KKNW.
Buckle up for safety, buckle up. Buckle up for safety, always buckle up. Pull your seat belt snug, give an extra tug. Buckle up for safety, buckle up.
Buckle up for safety, buckle up. Buckle up for safety, always buckle up. Show the world you care by the belt you wear. Buckle up for safety when you're driving.
Buckle up for safety, buckle up. Buckle up for safety, always buckle up. Put your mind at ease, tell your riders please. Get your seatbelts buckled, everybody buckle up.
The National Safety Council says seatbelts can and do save lives every day.
Buckle up for safety, everybody buckle up.
Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/1150KKNW.
You're listening to Drive Time Radio with New York Vinny.
I'm back with you here on Drive Time Radio. New York Vinny in with you. Hanging out a Saturday morning as we usually are. Then, of course, online at drivetime-radio.com. As well as on the podcast universe. You get us at Apple. You can get us at Stitcher. You can get us at Anchor. And probably any place good podcasts are sold. Although I don't think they sell these. I think they give them away for free, to be honest with you. But we'd like you and your friends, of course, to click on it and check on us and hang out with us and get our views on what's going on in the automotive world. We're also doing some plans in the near future here to get out and do the show live on Saturday mornings at some car events that are coming up here in the not-too-distant future. So we'll let you know where those are, too. You can come out and see us live, and who knows, maybe we'll take your automotive expertise as well. Right, time now for the Drive Time Road Test.
The Drive Time Radio Road Test. Every week, Vinny puts another car through its paces and lets you know the good, the bad, and the ugly.
And I got nothing but good to say about this week's Drive Time Road Test, the Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross. I'm driving a 2020 Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross this week. And when you put it up against the Hyundai Tucson, the Nissan Rogue, the Honda CR-V, and you look at what you get for the money in this thing, not to mention the warranty as well, it's not your greatest resale car. But when you buy one of these, I don't know that you're looking at resale right away. I think you're looking for a good, solid car that is comfortable, will get you where you're going, will give you the necessities of what you need to get there, has ease of operation, and is safe. And the Eclipse Cross delivers on all of those. Now, it may be a little bit confusing because it has Eclipse in its name, and that was Mitsubishi's sports car a few years ago, but this has nothing to do with a sports car. It's just a sporty-looking compact crossover. The driving dynamics are nice. It has car-like feel to it. It holds the road well. Good steering feedback. It goes where you want it to go. And, you know, it's maybe not up to a Mazda CX-5, but I think, you know, in sports car feeling, they put enough in there that you feel like you're driving something that connects you with the road. And in these smaller crossovers, I think that's something that you have to look for, is a connection with the road. It gives you a feeling like you're involved with this car. You know, some of these cars, they tune them so that you almost get a luxury feel to it, like you're not involved, like you don't want to be, like the only thing that you want to do is get in it and have it take you someplace. This car does more than that. It is roomy inside. It gives you, from the outside, a very unique looking car. Sharp lines, great colors on these cars. The Mitsubishi color palette is really satisfying. And you get great color, good visibility in the car. It sits up tall, you sit up high. It has a styling that is unique and different from most of the flat-sided, kind of slab-sided SUV small crossovers that are out there. So it gives you a distinct styling. It doesn't look like everything else in the parking lot. It has, in the rear, deck lid, has that piece of glass that goes under the belt line of the car, so you can actually not just look on your screen and see what's behind you, but actually, for those of us who still turn around and look, you can see lower than most cars with this type of tailgate, because most cars with this type of tailgate have metal there. This one puts glass in that space, and I think makes for safer experience. This car, this 2020 Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross, with its turbo engine, it pops out about 152 horsepower, I believe, in the one that I am driving. It's probably not up to par with some of the other ones that probably deliver a little closer to 200 horsepower. But how many times do you call on all of the horsepower? Probably when you're towing. You're probably not going to tow a lot with this vehicle. This is not a towing vehicle. This is to get around town in the snow, in the gravel, in the dirt, in whatever nature may throw at you type of vehicle. And it does that job well. Has a switch right there on the console. You can switch it between the different modes that give you better traction formulas for grass, for gravel, excuse me, and for snow. And it's a simple push of the button, and it does formulates the four-wheel drive, the all-wheel drive, to do what you need it to do. And I think that's you know, very good, you know, very easy to operate. Again, a sharp-looking car. It's a good gas mileage on it as well. And it the only place it probably, I don't know, probably lacks a little bit is the width in the back in the cargo area. Probably could use a little bit more width, but the reality is I don't think you're going to notice it. What you will notice, though, is the price when you go to buy one of these things, because I know they have a list price of about $32,000, $33,000, but you can go and really cut a pretty good deal at a Mitsubishi dealership for one of these things, because for whatever reason, they're not people's first choice. And I think that's a shame, because I think it's one of the, no pun intended here, one of the uncut diamonds of the automotive business, where you go and you see, you look at it, you say, well, I don't really know that much about Mitsubishi. How's their dealer network? How's this? How's that? When you get in the car and you drive it, I think you'll feel that it's equal to everything else out there and will probably cost you less money to get into. So it's worth a look. Again, this is no knock against anybody else's cars, just that Mitsubishi puts out this product that is a fine product, that is a good product. And, you know, much like Mazda in a lot of ways, they're you know, they're number three and number four in the market, and people don't look at them right away. Look at a Honda. They look at a Toyota. Obviously, look at Toyota RAV4 is the best-selling compact SUV out there. They look at Nissan and the Nissan Rogue. But the Mitsubishi and the Mazda, and especially the Mitsubishi, I think, bears looking at if you're shopping that type of car. So it's the Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross. It's made in Japan. This is not one of the Mitsubishis that are made at their plant in Indiana. It gets good fuel economy. Again, it's not a great towing vehicle, but it'll get you 26 on in the city, 29 on the highway, 27 mpg combined, and I don't yet have the safety rating for the 2020 Cross. But if you're in that market, and that's the way you're looking to go for a small SUV, which seems to be the way that everybody is going these days, the Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross is something that certainly is worth looking at. Something that'll give you a car that is different than everybody else is driving down the street. And that's a good thing, isn't it? That's the Drive Time Road Test for this week. The 2020 Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross. I think that's also going to get us close to wrapping things up as well. Isn't it, Mike? So, thank you to Lisa Barrow for spending some time with us this morning. Thank you to you, of course, for listening. We really always appreciate the chance to communicate with you. Please, again, use my email or jump on my Facebook page at Facebook/NYVinny or Facebook/DriveTimeRadio and TV. And we will catch up with you again next Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. We always appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show and to spend some time with us clowning around about cars. That will put this one in the books. I'm New York Vinny. Thank you so much, and we will see you next Saturday morning at 8, if the Lord's willing, and the creek don't rise, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 KKNW.